I'm a research geneticist with the USDA ARS in Ames, and the title of my talk is Characterization of Transgenic Maize Containing Iron-Rich Proteins in the Grain. And I really didn't have a lot to do with this project. This work was started by two groups of co-workers at Iowa State University. So this group of people expressed the soybean protein ferritin in the grain of transgenic corn, and then this group of people expressed maize hemoglobin in grain of maize, overexpressed maize hemoglobin, I should say, because hemoglobin is a natural maize protein, and many people don't realize that plants have hemoglobin as well as animals, but they do. So these people started these projects independently, and then they, when they got down the road and had some transgenic plants to analyze, they came and asked me to help them with the analysis. So the two students I've been working with on these projects are Millie Kenobi and Anastasia Bodnar. So the problem of iron deficiency is extremely serious because iron is essential in animal metabolism. So in our blood, hemoglobin is a major protein that carries oxygen to all of our cells. Iron is used in electron transfer reactions in our mitochondria to produce energy, and it's used in a bunch of other biochemical reactions as a cofactor for many enzymes. And we don't get enough iron in our diets, and this causes a condition called anemia, where you have a low red blood cell count. According to a World Health Organization study, anemia affects a lot of the people of the world. Something like 2 billion people have iron-deficient diets. So it's a serious problem, and forgive the pun here, but there's an irony because iron is the fourth most abundant element in the Earth's crust. It makes up 5.6% of the Earth's crust. So the problem is not that there's enough iron out there. It's a complicated situation, and one big part of the situation is iron bioavailability. So this is a figure that was put together by Ross Welch and Michelle Graham, and it illustrates the complexities of iron bioavailability, where you start with iron in the plant, and the iron that is actually absorbed and used by our body is determined by many factors, so including what happens during ingestion of the food. The food has to be absorbed, the iron from the food has to be absorbed, and then utilized by our body. And that what is actually used by our body is the bioavailable iron content. And many things affect that, including other components of the food we eat. So things like phytic acid chelates iron very effectively, and we animals don't degrade it efficiently, so the iron is not bioavailable. And then there are a lot of more social aspects of our diets that come into play in determining iron bioavailability as well. So the situation is very complex. That's the point I want to leave you with. And in corn plants, the way iron metabolism works is that iron is taken up from the soil by siderophores such as nicotianamine, and the enzymes NAS and NAAT are responsible for synthesizing these siderophores, and then the chelated iron is taken up by a transporter called YS1. And once in the plant, that iron goes into its functional forms. So it goes into ferredoxins that are doing electron transport for photosynthesis. It goes into the enzymes where it's a cofactor, and things like hemoglobin. So there's a lot of iron in the leaves conducting the metabolism of the plant. Another place iron goes is into storage forms in the seed. In the seeds, iron is required for the germinating seedling until it can mine its own iron from the soil. And because iron is potentially toxic, the plant needs to sequester it away in a form that's inactive. And it does this with proteins such as ferritin, which chelates a large number of iron atoms, and then phytate, as I mentioned earlier. And if you think about the different biological roles of the tissues of the plant, I think it's pretty clear that the functional iron in the leaves is more bioavailable because it hasn't been sequestered specifically for storage, in contrast to the storage iron in the seeds, which has low bioavailability. So a clear solution to the iron deficiency problem is to eat a lot of green leafy vegetables, because that's where this functional iron is that we can readily absorb in our bodies and use. So unfortunately, you know, the green leafy vegetables aren't available to everybody, and that's the motivation for biofortification projects. We'd like to increase the iron content and the availability of iron in the staple, the plants, parts of the plant that go into making staple foods that we consume in abundance. And a lot of work has gone into looking at expression of iron-rich proteins in cereal grains, and I apologize for not presenting this original data, but there's just a large body of data, and what I'm going to do is just summarize this data, and I encourage you to look at the data yourself if you're interested in this area and make your own interpretations. But after reading these studies, I conclude that it's possible to express ferritin, for example, in seeds, and that causes a modest increase in iron content. And it's also possible to improve bioavailability by expressing phytase, to degrade that phytate and making the iron more bioavailable. So I think we've already established proof of concept that a transgenic approach can work. Let's see, maybe I can just go back. I don't want to rule out one thing that people often say is that natural genetic variation for iron content is low, and so they encourage transgenic approaches. And I think it's a mistake to rule out breeding approaches as well, because there are many cases where we have used traditional breeding methods to expand beyond the natural variation that occurs in plants. So I'm most familiar with the situation in corn, but protein and oil have been pushed out past the natural limits of corn, and so breeding is, you know, definitely something that shouldn't be ruled out. But I'm going to focus on the transgenic approaches, and I'm going the wrong way. And the objectives of the study then were to characterize iron-rich proteins, the impact of these iron-rich transgenes on the expression of native genes in maize. So I'm not going to focus really on the nutritional impact, but more on the impact of the other genes, because that's going to reveal to us some of the limitations of the technology. Okay, so I just want to establish that our transgenic plants are doing what we want them to. So we have antibodies to soybean ferritin, and you can see in a Western blot here that we're producing soybean ferritin specifically in the endosperm of transgenic maize. So we use seed storage proteins to get this tissue-specific expression. And our maize hemoglobin is, you can see this very light band here. It's also, the transgene is working there. So the design of our experiment was, basically we took four events. So I'm going to focus now on the ferritin story, because our data is more complete there. So we took four events of our ferritin-expressing transgenes and planted them in a row. The plants are segregating, so we use PCR to identify the positive plants in a row. And we cross the non-transgenic inbred line to B73. These have had three back crosses to B73, so we're in a fairly uniform genetic background. And then we use, when we're looking at kernels, we use PCR to identify positive kernels and negative kernels on those ears that are segregating for the transgene. So all our comparisons are either between two plants that are in the same row, or pairs of plants in the same row, or pairs of kernels that are produced on the same ear, okay? So we're going to look at several tissues listed here, and some of the tissues we wanted to look before the transgene is expressed. Remember, it's seed specific, so before grain fill, the transgene shouldn't be around. It shouldn't be functioning. And then we have a couple of cases after transgene expression. And so we evaluated a number of traits. We looked at mineral content, protein content, and then transcript levels of a bunch of genes that are involved in iron metabolism. And then we also, because we're using seed storage proteins, I was curious to know what the impact is. We're using seed storage protein promoters. I wanted to know the impact on the seed storage proteins of doing that. So the mineral content is perhaps the most interesting data, and you can see, so these are RT-PCR experiments where we've set the non-transgenic plants or tissues to zero. So this is an endosperm, or I'm sorry, to one. And this is an endosperm, and you can see we have significant differences in iron, but the difference is slight, and that's consistent with what people have seen in the literature. We have differences in magnesium and calcium as well. And then another thing was protein content was significantly higher in non-transgenic kernels, so that's something we want to follow up on as well. In roots, we didn't see large effects, okay? Before or after transgene expression, we had only one gene that was differentially expressed. This is the one of the genes in the siderio-4 biosynthetic pathway. It's differentially expressed in both cases, but really the changes that we saw were small. Similarly with leaves, we didn't see very much effect in leaves, and you know, I think this demonstrates the value of using a seed-specific promoter. There were larger differences during transgene expression, but they weren't significant, so you know, I don't know really what to make of that. So the interesting stuff happens when we begin to look at the endosperm, and we had significant differences in most of the genes that we looked at. So the siderio-4 biosynthetic enzymes, some were upregulated, some were downregulated. Maize iron, native iron genes were tended to be upregulated. So ferredoxins and the native maize ferritin was upregulated. And this is just our transgene here. We didn't detect any in the negatives, and it was there in the positives, as you'd expect. And we know our transgene is transcriptionally active because the transcript was four times as high as the native ferritin transgene. So it looks like we're creating a stronger sink for iron, perhaps, in the kernels. We're also having an effect on seed storage proteins, and this is consistent with the protein data that I mentioned earlier, where in non-transgenic plants we have more of certain levels of zeons, although these aren't the zeons from which we took the promoters to make our transgenic plants. So I'm not sure what's going on here. Okay, so I just want to conclude then by pointing out that I think iron content of cereals, at least, can be increased modestly by expression of iron-rich proteins, and we observed minimal impacts on transcripts in roots and leaves, maybe because we used a seed-specific promoter. But in endosperm, there were a lot of changes to transcripts, and I think it's going to be important to follow up on this and figure out if we're having an impact, negative impact, on these kernels by expression of these genes. So nobody's keeping me on time, but I see I have 2 minutes for questions. So. Are there any questions? Oh, thank you. Owen.
What fraction of the total seed protein do you think the transgene represents?
It's very small. We haven't looked at it, but we can't see it on SDS page gels. I'm sure it's less than 1%, probably less than 0.1%.
So if the zeons are all way down in the transgenics, for the zeons we could look at, are there obvious differences by eye to seed quality, or have we not looked at that yet?
We've done things like 100 kernel weights and that kind of thing, and we haven't seen a difference there. So, you know, I think the protein content difference is significant. I mean, that's a big difference to seed quality, I would say. But other than that, visual impacts, the seeds aren't opaque or anything. So, yeah. Okay, one more question. Tommy. Right, Tommy's question is, what's the potential for increasing the ability of the plant to take up iron? And I think there's good potential there. I think it's not clear what the limiting step in iron accumulation is. And so we're assuming in this study we're trying to increase the sink, but there's certainly, I think increasing the source strength would be a great approach too. Probably doing both in concert is really what it's going to take. Great question.